tornadoes, hurricanes, blizzards. We cover it all on Twister Talk.
Welcome to Twister Talk. I'm Gary. Thanks for joining us. We'll continue our interview with Nate McGinnis from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington. And Sue and Brandon will be joining me on that. So without further ado, let's jump right back into the interview. Well, I know we've over the months here on the show have stressed that whenever a severe weather event happens, information. People have to be ready to, if something moves, it moves quickly sometimes. Yeah. You've got to be ready to go. Yeah. And we've noticed that over the years. It's funny you mentioned that. You guys had that outbreak in December 2022, that Arctic outbreak, you had it right on the nose. I went to bed that night. It was 43 degrees. I wake up at 10 a.m. the next morning. It's minus 7. That was incredible. I had never seen anything like that.
But it was predicted.
It was predicted. Yeah. And you guys nailed it.
Yeah, they nailed it. You're down to the timing.
Yeah. Then we had a January, Nate, where it was, we had the first severe weather watch I can remember in my life.
In 2023. That was really something.
A severe thunderstorm watch in the middle of January. That caught everybody off guard, but it was quite an event because there were several pretty nasty lines of storms that moved through the state, if I remember right.
Yeah, and I'll just go back a couple of years. Was back in 2020 was Ohio's first January tornado. And issued the warning on that thing, unfortunately, with 0 minutes of lead time. But it just goes to show you that, officially, while, there probably were tornadoes that had occurred in January, we just didn't see them we didn't have the radar technology to, like, oh, look, the rotation, and oh, look, there was damage reported there. We didn't have the foresight to declare them as officially a tornado. But, this was a situation where, if you were to go back and look at the map, I think it was January 16th, maybe. I can't remember the exact date. Mm-hmm. Back there in 2020, a tornado goes right through the city of Troy, Ohio, just north of Dayton, a few minutes. And it's one of those things where, up until that point, Ohio had not had a January tornado. And so it definitely was a reminder that tornadoes can happen anytime during the year. And 2023, that severe event was just another thing to keep us on our toes when it comes to dealing with the variety of weather around here.
Yeah, that was very unusual. Very unusual.
You put it mildly.
Like, whoa, here it comes. Go ahead, Brandon.
I did have a few things that I wanted to kind of touch on here. The next question I had here kind of tied into that, so maybe we'll just dovetail that in here real quick. If you would, in the time that you've been doing this, what would you say is the single greatest technological innovation in forecasting that you've seen?
Interesting. I could answer this from the National Weather Service perspective. I do think that we made a good change in taking the forecast and removing the barriers of the individual CWAs, county warning areas, for those that don't know that acronym. You have 122 offices, and you've got a lot of very intelligent, highly experienced people that are trying to do their best with the best forecast and find the right recipe. And I think, there's pros and cons to this, and we can get into it if you want to. But I think the biggest pro that, we kind of remove the boundaries of the weather from each individual weather forecast office is that even if the personalities don't necessarily want to do it, it forces us to talk a little bit. Mm-hmm. It forces us to say, hey, I know that we've got highs in upper 80s, in 3 days, 4 days. And the National Blended Models has given us this, but I really think we should look at a higher end a value. I truly believe that we're talking low to mid 90s. You know, it's been dry, and I think I understand I'm not really answering this technologically, but I think what the technological answer is that the National Blend of Models is a big advancement. But how it applies in the National Weather Service workflow, targets of opportunity, mm-hmm. right? We're looking for opportunities in the forecast to talk to one another to say, hey, this low temperature is not low enough. We've got a snowpack. We got a huge 1040 high pressure coming in. We've got to tank these low temperatures by 5, 10, 15 degrees. And I think, to me, it's kind of like a double whammy with regards to the National Blend of Models coming in, taking a lot of the workload of like the day-to-day forecasting, but then it allows us to open up our minds to those higher impacts, to those targets of opportunity when they do come.
That's great. That's great information. Sue, you had a couple of questions I know you want to ask them about, and we have tons of questions.
We have tons of questions, but one thing that I've noticed over the past maybe 10 years is that forecasting for winter weather appears to have improved dramatically, particularly as regards the snow amounts. You definitely seem to have been able to find that up a great deal, and I'm kind of curious as to how that's come about.
That's a very interesting question, because I'll be honest with you, I will often hear the opposite. I will hear. You know, and this is something that, you know, I don't think I necessarily would get in trouble, but social media is driving me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as a weather service office, it's probably driving everybody crazy. I'll eventually get back to your question, but I just looked at this last snowfall event that we had across Ohio. You know, you had this mesoscale band, this one county, two county wide band of snow that saturated the atmosphere about 4 to 5 hours earlier for isolated regions from basically western Ohio all the way to like almost Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, this very fine line. And I'm telling you, we had people from the north saying, oh, they got it wrong again. And then people that were in the snow band saying, oh, they got it wrong again. And then people south of the snow band, oh, they got it wrong again. So it's one of those things where, I remember back, 10 years ago, the weather forecast used to be so much more accurate. And I wish that I had some objective data to say that your perspective is dead on. Because, one, that would make me feel good, right? I just think that I do think that the biggest challenge with weather forecasting is where are people actually getting their information from?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm getting it from a weather app, if I'm getting it from a weather weenie, you know, that's in his basement posting the GFS at day, hour 300, that forecast was wrong. Well, that person that saw that post doesn't understand that they're not actually seeing a forecast. They're just seeing a computer model do something crazy, which they do all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's like if it was the MLB, the weather forecast models would probably be batting, 200,
right.
And with what you're saying about us being, improving on it, maybe we're batting 300. I mean, it's still incredibly a difficult science to nail down those details. So what's it going to do in my backyard? Well,
right.
You know, Susie down the street said they got 8 inches and we got 4 and a bunch of rain. Well, I'm mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't know. Weather's crazy, but anyway, right. I think in terms of computational power, forecasting will continue to improve. But if it's the perspective of the individual that it is not improving, if mm-hmm. it is not getting better, then man, it's another challenge for me to try and find my way to communicate this information and get it into the hands of the people that A, want to listen, and B, are willing to take the necessary precautions with that information that they receive.
Yeah, that's the issue, I think, probably is the communication, because the place I always go, particularly for winter weather, is I use your winter weather product, which is excellent, and then I also refer to the forecast discussion.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
and I think I'd hate to say that the age of the forecast discussion is decaying.
I love the forecast discussion.
It's still our number one hit product, right? When we look at our numbers, it's obviously still the number one product that people look. I think it had over like 140,000 or something. I can't remember what it was. maybe it was higher than that. Anyway, our science operations officer had sent out some statistics on it, and our AFD remains the highest thing. I just hope that the audience of people reading the forecast discussion, it's the dissemination after that. And obviously, I hope I get a chance to talk about our relationships with the rest of the weather enterprise. But I think that's what comes down to it is I will continue to write a forecast discussion as long as it's within my job description and I'm allowed to do it. And I will try to continue to do new things in it. You know, sometimes I'll write a big long paragraph. Sometimes I'll break it up into sections and try and, tell the story how I think relates to a particular event. So it's great to hear that it's still being looked at it's a little strange to think that, you know, in 15 to 20 years, the forecast discussion might not exist anymore. I don't know that for a fact. I'm just saying, like, it's a hypothetical, it's a prediction. Like, I don't know where technology continues to go. How do things change? But yeah, I have the forecast discussion to explain my thoughts. But in the future, are you guys familiar with NWS chat?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, right.
So you've heard of NWS chat. I don't know if you've heard that we recently transitioned to the Slack platform.
Okay.
Which will provide more stability to the interface because NWS chat exploded in how effective it was and how popular it was. And one of the biggest reasons that we had to transition to a private company was because we simply could not handle the load of demand that it was needing. And so I think, again, maybe it's no longer a forecast discussion, but it's now I'm communicating what I would in the forecast discussion into this NWS chat platform that's then disseminated by the various groups.
Yeah.
That's a great answer because, you know, it's that kind of, we're learning things about the weather just sitting here talking to you. And we are talking to Nate McGinnis of the National Weather Service office down in Wilmington, Ohio. And Nate, I guess it's time to jump into the thing everybody likes to talk about on Twister Talk, and that is severe weather. And the question that we've always wondered and everything, when you get the idea like, oh, you know, Thursday is going to be a severe weather day, how do you coordinate with places like the Storm Prediction Center and others in disseminating the information that you're going to need? What decide, you know? Well, I know they issue the watches, but as far as following up on the watch, warnings and everything else, how do you guys coordinate efforts with that?
I was so excited when I saw this question because I do think that it is, I mean, this has to be our bread and butter, right?
Oh, absolutely,
we have to be able to work with our national partners at, whether it's the Storm Prediction Center, whether it's the National Hurricane Center, Climate Prediction Center, regardless. Mm-hmm. There are these individuals that are experienced and they are skillful at looking at the weather from a regional aspect. They probably could look at it from the local, but their job is to look at it from the regional, national perspective and give us their best product on where they think the severe weather is going to be. So just focusing on severe weather, you know, dialogue can begin as early as 7 days out. You know, Storm Prediction Center has a days 4 through 7 for a reason. Now, obviously, it's pretty hard to have that kind of, or it's pretty abnormal to have high confidence that far in advance. But it can begin as early as that far out. Now, typically, it doesn't go very far, right? We're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. 15% at day 6, great. We don't really do anything with that a whole lot outside of, like you said, kind of teasing, you know, that this potential is there. Mm-hmm. But as you get closer to the event, collaboration increases. And I'll be honest and say that it can actually become challenging when you have a widespread impact. When you have a multi-state, multi-hazard, you know, you got supercells producing baseball, softball size hail, and you've also got nocturnal tornadoes, but, you know, long track significant. I mean, the event itself can greatly change how the collaboration takes place between Storm Prediction Center and ourselves. So, you know, typically we get an update. I don't want to say we get an update like everybody else, but we will get their initial thoughts. You know, it kind of drops into our inbox and they say, hey, I'm thinking about expanding the enhanced, you know, out to here. What do you guys think? And we'll say, well, you know, that's fine. Or day three, day two, you know. But as you get closer, that fine tuning of the details is what's going to matter. Because, and this is no slight on the Storm Prediction Center. Like I said, they've got a job to do. But we have this phrase called broad brushing, which is basically if you've got all five levels, right? Marginal, slight, enhanced, moderate, high. If you got all five of these threats out there on the map, you're going to get a big, large area of enhanced and slight and moderate that if the event was smaller, it could perhaps be more precise. It could be more targeted to a much smaller location. And because, us at a local level, if they've broad brushed, I'm going to keep using that term just because it's easier to kind of outlay. They've broad brushed and enhanced with a 10% SIG tour, and it stretches way into Ohio. And it's like, look, we get it. Like, the atmosphere's there, but communicating to the state of Ohio that 3/4 of their state could see potentially long track, tornadoes. That's incredibly hard to disseminate down to the local level,
right?
Because it looks like everybody has the same threat, but we know that probably the western edge is going to have a higher chance than the eastern chance. But there's got to be an end, right? The contours eventually have to end, and we call that being on the gradient, right? Oh, well, we're on the gradient. We've got a moderate in our south, an enhanced across our middle, a slight in the north, and then a marginal, just on the outside of our CWA. And it's incredibly challenging to disseminate that. So yes, that's when it comes to working with the Storm Prediction Center, we are communicating behind the scenes. We have full capabilities of saying, hey, this does not look right. We need to chat. We'll have webinars. We'll jump on meets and we'll hash it out, verbally, face to face as best that we can, on the virtual realm. And I think if I could continue my response a little bit longer, is the Memorial 2019 outbreak is a perfect example of that. Again, it was one of those hyper focused areas and very localized impacts. But to say that we started out that event with a marginal risk in our area is mind-boggling to me. That you start from a marginal and you end up with long track EF3, EF4 tornadoes through a metropolitan area, and that just goes to show you. They probably changed the outlook like 4 or 5 times within like a 6 or 8 hour period, because of just how quickly the events were transpiring. So yeah, it can feel a bit overwhelming when there's 29 offices on a webinar call, a collaboration call, because it's a huge outbreak and there's a lot of offices that are involved. So it takes a lot of patience. It takes confidence. It takes, I would say, good communication to be able to say, look, we need a change here. I know you've got this high risk that you're dealing with, but this is out of line. And we've had to talk after events sometimes about the communication or the lack thereof. And they're as much of humans as we are. And if we're not learning from the events themselves, then we're not doing our jobs.
And again, we'd like to thank Nate McGinnis from the National Weather Service office in Wilmington for joining us on today's Twister Talk. Great interview. Hope you're enjoying it as much as we enjoyed doing it. Our third and final installment of the interview will be airing soon here on Twister Talk. And so for Sue and Brandon, I'm Gary. Have yourself a good one.